How to pay for health care in the state of Florida. A look at the next steps just ahead. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9. And now catch our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we'll take your calls as North Florida legislators Aaron Bean and Mia Jones discuss the next steps for health care funding here in the Sunshine State. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, ending homelessness on the First Coast. How one local group says they're really making progress. Plus, Special Olympics star Loretta Claiborne. All of that ahead. But first, this morning, we've got an update on health care funding here in Florida from two members of our local delegation. Now, the state legislature adjourned for the year without expanding Medicaid to provide health insurance for about 800,000 low-income residents in the state, but the debate will continue. Federal money for the low-income pool, or LIP as it's called, that's assigned to hospitals that care for the poor, that pool of money will decline by another $400 million next year, and state lawmakers again will be under pressure to help the state's hospitals offset their losses. It will also be the final year the federal government will pay 100% of costs for any Medicaid expansion plan the state approves. That's an incentive worth billions to states like Florida. So what's the way forward on this? Well, joining us by phone, we're pleased to welcome Senate Health Policy Chief Aaron Bean, Republican of Fernandina Beach. Senator Bean, a pleasure to have you back on the program.
Melissa Ross, it is always a treat to be with you. Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good morning, sir. And in a moment, we'll also welcome Representative Mia Jones, a Jacksonville Democrat and ranking member of the House Health and Human Services Committee. And we want your calls as we discuss health care in the state of Florida. Get on the line to connect with your local representatives at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on Facebook. Lots of ways to discuss this with us. Now, Senator Bean, let's begin with some of your specific involvement in this. During the most recent special session, you floated the idea of a joint health care committee going into the 2016 legislative session that would allow members of the House and Senate to work together on Medicaid expansion and other health care issues. Of course, the two chambers, the House and the Senate, were not on the same page when it comes to this issue. Can you bring us up to date on where your efforts are in that area?
That's exactly right. I'd be happy to. And you did a great job of explaining it a little bit. It gets kind of complicated sometimes. I give talks to Rotary clubs and other civic groups, and I'm always in danger of losing people because it gets kind of complicated and hairy sometimes. I also want to tell your listeners what a great job you did as the official MC at the new council, city council swearing-in ceremony.
Oh, thanks.
The Times Union Center was absolutely packed, and you, as you always do, did a great job welcoming everybody and made everybody feel extremely comfortable. And it was a great time. So you have a special gift to the local people. So
thank you.
Well done. Let your listeners know that that's your rocket. Okay, healthcare in Florida. We have an issue with Florida because our partner in healthcare is the federal government. The federal government gives us a lot of money for a lot of things. In healthcare, we use Downey to help our safety net hospitals in particular with treating people that don't pay anything or can't pay anything. Our hospital here, the safety net here, is U.S. Health, formerly known as SHAMS. They treat anybody that comes off the street and make sure that they're well and stabilized. And it's hard to stay in business when so few people pay. They do a fantastic job. But our partner, the federal government, says, you know what, we're not going to give you those monies anymore because there are other options available that Florida, if you want to continue, then you'll have to take advantage of other options. So we didn't ask for the change. It's just the federal government says we're going to change it. So we've got to figure out a way of how to go forward. They told us 2 years ago it was going to end. And so we had some time to prepare, but I guess we thought that they were going to work with us going forward. So at the very last minute, literally the last month, the The federal government puts forth a plan that says we'll cut it in half. Basically $2 billion that comes from the feds, we'll cut that in half to a billion. But then Florida, you'll have to make up the difference or come out and work out a plan. So one of the options we explored was Medicaid expansion. And Medicaid expansion, Medicaid, which is, again, the program that we partner with the federal government, really is not the best program in terms of getting results, in terms of what it costs. It's not the most efficient program. Providers don't dig it because it doesn't pay enough. It's hard to, if you're on Medicaid, it's hard to get a provider to cover you. It's for so many reasons, it's not the best program. So when there was a vote on Medicaid expansion a couple of years ago, I actually voted no on that program. So Medicaid expansion, the legislature said no. This past year, are you still with me, Melissa Ross? You're still with me?
Oh, we're still with you.
Because we're getting to the good part. Here's the good part. The good part is this. We said, okay, how could we do this in a method that would have better results for Floridians, take advantage of federal funds, do it in a very efficient way, and we think encourage people to work and encourage people to share in the cost of healthcare. Could we do all that? Is it possible to get all that done? Well, that's exactly what we did in a bill called The Fix. We called it The Fix. It was the Florida Health Insurance Exchange. And what we said was, federal government, will you allow Florida to take the money that you otherwise would have given to us, give us that money, and let us purchase or actually make vouchers available to people who would be eligible for that program, let them buy private insurance. Let them buy private insurance. And to those people that were going to take advantage of it, we said there is a work requirement. You're going to have to work if you're able to work. We expect you to work 30 hours a week. Now, if you're disabled or a caregiver, we gave some exceptions. But if you're able-bodied, we expect you to be out there hustling just like everybody else. We also said, okay, folks, if you're going to take advantage of healthcare, we want you to help pay for it. Unlike traditional Medicaid, where there's no, in fact, the federal government says we couldn't require any skin in the game or anybody to pay anything, even a dollar. The federal government says we wouldn't allow that. But we said under our new program that we expect everybody to help with monthly premiums,
right,
just like everybody else pays.
And Senator Bean, let me just jump in for those that are just tuning in. The number to connect with Senator Bean is 549-2937. And I want to continue with your thought, but at the same time, Representative Mia Jones just now joining the show, let's bring you into the discussion as well. From the other side of the aisle, the Democrat side, as Senator Bean talks about the idea the upper chamber floated, what are your thoughts about that proposal and the way forward for health care funding?
Well, and good morning, Senator Bean. I will tell you that in this instance, it's not the other side of the aisle. The Democrats believed in the plan, the fix that Senator Bean and the Senate proposed. We were able to support that plan, recognizing that the senator and his colleagues had listened to the debate. They had listened to the arguments and they had addressed those concerns that had been put forth and provided us with an opportunity for Florida to move forward and receive the dollars that were available to us. And so in this instance, it was not Republican Senator Bean and Democratic Representative Jones on opposite sides. We stood together, and I want to thank him for the product that he put out. I want to thank him for the commitment to the citizens of Florida and recognizing that there was an opportunity for us to come to the table and not walk away from the table with anything other than we are going to have a win-win.
How do both of you see this going forward the next time the legislature meets? The House, the Florida House, was not on the same page with this piece of legislation. How do you see the two chambers coming together to try to resolve these issues next year? Senator Bean.
You know, I don't see a change. The players are going to remain largely and almost identically intact to what they were now. what we did, the way the end was, we said, or the state of Florida rejected federal funds and said, we're going to use state funds in its place. We put up nearly $500 million. Next year, that price goes up as the federal government weans us off federal funds. So it's going to cost us $750 million next year. And then the following year, it's going to be all up to us. So maybe if the numbers change and every time we put state dollars in the pot, that's less money we can spend on state projects like education or roads or you name it. We can't spend that money. So the numbers get bigger, and I guess the pressure ratchets it up. But we've got to come up with an idea. Mia Jones, what are your thoughts?
I said to my colleagues on the floor of the House in my debate that we have an opportunity for us to sit down and say, now is the time. We do know that the price tag is going to continue to go up, as Senator Bean has indicated. And recognizing that we are not just sitting around with pots of money that are overflowing to the point that we don't need the dollars from the federal government. And that being the case, I have said to them that let's come to the table again and come to the table with a true heart of saying that we are going to walk away with a win-win. And unless they are willing to do that, I think Senator Bean is right. We will end up in the same predicament that we were in before. I would say that the federal government was very clear on what they expected of us. They shared that with us, and we had an opportunity to craft what worked for Florida. You heard Senator Bean say earlier that Medicaid didn't work the best. And in Florida, we said that because it doesn't work the best, let's change it. And so we had a pilot program. We implemented private insurance for those patients, and we made sure that we put some safeguards in place to safeguard the taxpayers' dollars. And then we turned around and said, this is what's going to work for Florida. We could take that plan that we said worked for Florida and create it into what we know will ultimately work for us through expansion of our plan.
Lots of calls. Let's go to your calls right now for Senator Aaron Bean, Senate Health Policy Chief, Republican of Fernandina Beach, and Representative Mia Jones, Democrat from Jacksonville and ranking member of the House Health and Human Services Committee, as we discuss how Florida will deal with this issue of health care funding. What are your questions? What are your thoughts? The number to join us, 549-2937. Jim in Riverside, you'll start us off. Hi, Jim. Good morning. Jim, are you there? Okay. I know he's there. We'll have to reboot the phone system here very quickly. But Senator Bean, let me go back to you very quickly. The Senate really did make health care coverage a priority in the regular session and the joint special session. But as you said, with the same players in place the next time around, what is the Senate, the upper chamber strategy to try to find, I don't know, some sort of reconciliation on this issue?
Well, we're open. First of all, I want to salute Mia Jones. We had a two-hour debate in the Senate, which was a pretty healthy debate, and the House, Mia Jones, had led a seven-hour, is what I calculate, a seven-hour debate where it seemed like every single member, the 120 body, had to jump in and had a strong opinion on the program one way or the other. So next year, we've got to scratch our heads and see how we can address concerns. There are folks that say, we don't want to take federal money or the federal strings. We thought we addressed that by saying we're going to put a sunset provision. This program goes away in 2 years. We get a two-year test drive of the program using 100% federal funds, and then after 2 years, we can evaluate the program to see if it works for Florida, or if it doesn't, we can walk away with no strings attached.
7 hours on the floor, is that right?
Yes. I will tell you that usually when you have an opportunity to present a bill, you present it in a number of committees, and then by the time you get to the floor, you pretty much have a feel for where the questions are going to come from. I didn't have the benefit of that. I presented on Wednesday, and we voted on Thursday. So that debate and those questions were intense. But the one thing that I recognize in the questioning, it was simply a matter of let's find whatever we can to say that we don't want to do this. The one thing that the senators said is that they were, even in their debate, even in voting on fix, they were still open to making amendments and making changes. And so I made sure that I reiterated that throughout the entire process so that we could go ahead and continue the discussion and make whatever changes that needed to be made. But what was clear is that that really wasn't the spirit of what was being done. It was simply, let's continue to throw things out there, and we've already decided that this is not something we want to do.
And it's 549-2937 to connect with Senator Aaron Bean and Representative Mia Jones. What are your questions about health care in the state of Florida? 549-2937. Jim in Riverside back with us. Hi, Jim. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, and I apologize for the hang-up. That was on my end. Thanks to the representative and the senator for joining us this morning. Listen, I wanted to find out what exactly is fiscally conservative about what we're doing or fiscally responsible. The Florida taxpayer pays federal taxes, and we also pay taxes to the state of Florida. By failure to expand Medicaid here in Florida, we're paying for Medicare, for health care for people in California and all the other states that expanded it, but we're not getting that money. And then you wouldn't, the lip money went down, so we had to dip into our own Florida taxpayer budget to pay for that. So we're getting taxed twice here in Florida for health care that we're not actually getting. Why not expand Medicaid and get 100% of that money back here in the state of Florida, providing health care for Floridians, which we were already paying for? It's not fiscally conservative or responsible to double tax Floridians for health care that we're not getting. Thank you.
That's Jim in Riverside. Senator Bean.
Jim is correct that there's money available that we wouldn't use state taxes that we already sent to the federal government. But the legislature is not ready to expand Medicaid under the guidelines of what the federal government has outlined. So that's why we came up with a modified plan that we thought was a good plan. That plan passed the Florida Senate 37-3. It passed, went to the House, 7 hours worth of debate. And then I don't remember the exact vote, but it was largely party lines. I think we had 7 Republicans cross over and say, yes, that's the plan for me. But you remember the vote, how it went down?
I don't remember the number, but it was 7 Republicans that crossed over. And it was clear. We did have some that originally told us they were going to be with us. We needed 22, and we were not able to get that 22. I said to Representative and Speaker-designate Corcoran, at some point, we have to recognize that we've got to do something differently. And so during the 2 years that I were proposing the fix, we could have taken and put funding aside that we could take the interest off of and then help us to pay the 10% that we would have paid over time. And we would have still been saving Floridians money. There are a number of ways that we could approach this, and it really boils down to, as I shared with my colleagues, I know that for me and my family, there is not one day that I want to go by that we don't have health care insurance, recognizing that medical bills put families under every single day. And I know that they would not want that for their families. And if we look at it from that perspective and we recognize that we are going to pay for these services, I would rather pay a lower amount versus the higher amount.
Let's go now to Bill in Clay County. The number to join the show, 549-2937, to connect with Senator Aaron Bean and Representative Mia Jones. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great.
My question to the Senate is, why doesn't the state just, push to accept the Medicare program instead of looking at a program that at some point in time is going to cost the state more money out of state budgets, which is probably going to cause a situation where they're going to start pulling money from social services. And today we realize that the majority of problems that most states or cities that are faced have dealt with poverty, lack of resources for the mentally ill, lack of enforcement, police enforcement because of there's not dollars there in terms of education. So why would the state adopt a policy where they're not sure about the future, where revenues are going to have to be diverted at some point in time? It seems like they're really not thinking. Sometimes you wonder if the legislature uses their head only to hang their ears on. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks. That's Bill down in Clay County. Senator Bean.
Bill from Clay County. Thank you very much for the question. You know, we studied, and I was on a select committee to study the implementation of the Affordable Care Act in Florida. We looked at a variety of aspects of Medicaid in Florida and really found that it wasn't the best program in several aspects in terms of efficiency, in terms of how we spend money on the program, on providers, on different aspects. So Medicaid doesn't get the best results health-wise, nor from a financial point of view. So the legislature is not ready to take steps on expanding Medicaid, and that is why we wrote a plan that uses the federal monies to allow those 880,000 people access to health care using the federal monies, but doing it with private insurance. That's where we get the most bang for the buck. That's what providers are most looking for. That's how people get better faster, is on private insurance. So we thought that was a great plan of a step, that a master compromise plan, Bill, and that's what we were thinking of going forward. We came up short. We came up short this year, but we launched the dialogue of how we could do it. I was instrumental in helping write that plan. I thought it had a lot of conservative principles and points in it, with the work requirement, with the premium requirements that people had to pay. I was excited about it, and I really thought that we were going to come a lot closer or even have it passed this past year. We had a sunset clause. We addressed so many of the other side's concerns by putting in, addressing their concerns right in the bill. Came up short. Our mission overall, though, Representative Jones hasn't said it yet, but our number one mission from a Duval delegation standpoint, when we originally began our legislative session, number one priority was keeping U.S. health open, because you go back 3 to 4 months ago, it was iffy. It was iffy because they depend so much on the federal government for funds, and the federal government says we're cutting those funds. U.S. health folks were scrambling. It was just a scary time of how they were going to continue.
Yeah.
And that was the number. We came together, number one priority. We made that happen, and we largely used state funds to make that happen. In the future, we've got that same problem. It's only going to get worse.
Let me ask you about that as a follow-up, Mia Jones. Senator Bean said the Senate's Medicaid expansion plan, which went down in the House, that would have required people making as little as about $11,000 a year to pay $25 a month for health care. People without any income would have only had to pay $3 a month under this Senate plan. That went down to defeat, but as you try again, let's talk about the matter of UF Health. The former Shands, which has been financially precarious, and the CEO of that hospital, Russ Armistead, has been quite vocal about it. What are your long-term concerns about UF Health?
When I look at UF Health, I know that the problem is not going to go away. For quite some time, we have been in a position where, on the local level, we've given them less money. Over the past, through Mayor Brown's administration, they increased it by $3 million, so they went up to $26 million. The plan was to go up an additional $2 or $3 million in order to make sure that we were covering the cost of contributing to this problem that we have as a community. And when we start to look at the state, the question was put and posed to Russ, why is it that UF Health gets so much more than the other hospitals as it relates to this uncompensated care? And it's because the legislature has tied our hands. And we are not allowed to do what other communities are allowed to do by creating medical and health taxing districts, which then would allow us to have dollars available to us specifically for the needs of UF Health.
Here's a tweet from Julie, Senator Bean. Can Jacksonville consider a special revenue-raising district like other counties have for their safety net hospitals? Is that something that's on your radar?
We could consider it. The legislature would have to pass a bill allowing a referendum for Jacksonville, and then it would go to the voters. The voters would have to decide, is that something that we wish to do, perhaps a sales tax, but it would only be allowed if the voters, the majority of voters, says we want to do that.
And let me ask you both, too, as well, the recent King versus Burwell ruling in the Supreme Court upheld subsidies in states like Florida, which didn't set up their own state exchange under the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Do you see that ruling as perhaps taking some of the heat off the state legislature when it comes to subsidies and health care for Floridians? What are both of your thoughts on that aspect of this? Mia Jones.
Knowing my colleagues, I don't believe that that will change their minds any. I know they were waiting on that ruling. They expected that ruling to go down differently and anticipated being able to stand on that. Now that that has come down and it's said that, you know, we need to move forward, I think it's an opportunity, but I don't see there being a change in the mindset of Representative and Speaker Designate Corcoran and for the members of the Republican House and the majority of the members of the Republican House. Many of them do recognize that within their communities, there are many people who need this assistance. And the fact that we don't expand is not going to change the fact that they're going to get sick, that someone is going to pay for it, and that they will go to the hospitals. Our hospitals have come to the table. They have told us that they are open to it. The providers are willing to work with us, and the insurance industry has come to the table in a strong way to say that they want to be a part of this. And so as we're looking at this, I think that although the ruling came down the way we hoped it would, I don't see there being a change. Senator Bean, what do you think?
I think the Supreme Court got it wrong. I was extremely disappointed. To me, it was, I'm not even an attorney, and I got it right by seeing how crystal clear it was. I still don't see the advantages of Florida spending hundreds of millions of dollars to create its own exchange. That's something that we, as part of that Affordable Care Investigative Committee, we couldn't decide, or we couldn't see any benefits to Florida having its own exchange. But it's here. They ruled. They made that decision. I don't see changes in the players in the legislature, but perhaps there's an idea out there that we can consider and to take advantage of federal funds, but still keep Florida taxpayers protected.
Rose in Riverside is on the line. Hi, Rose. Good morning. Go ahead.
Am I on the line?
Yeah, go ahead, Rose. You're
okay.
On the air.
Thank
go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking my call. Listening to what I've heard of the program, it concerns me that the state is not participating in the expansion program, and primarily because, just remembering the article that was in the Times Union, I believe on Saturday or Sunday, that the governor and members of his cabinet, their monthly premiums for their health insurance is something like $8.34 for individuals and $30 for families. Now, assuming that that is their total contribution, perhaps the state is covering other parts of it, it would appear to me that there would be no problem in expanding health care, especially when I consider that I pay $356.03 a month premium for my own personal health insurance. So it just concerns me that the state appears to be giving little consideration to the needs of those who are less fortunate than the person who was interviewed in the Times Union Union article referring to those who were not assimilated as he or she was.
That's Rose in Riverside.
I'll take my answer off the line.
Thank you, Rose in Riverside. Yes, the Times Union's Tia Mitchell reporting that the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, agricultural commissioner Adam Putnam, and CFO Jeff Atwater all pay $8 a month for individual coverage, $30 for family policies. Of course, House and Senate members pay a little more. But what about that? The optics of that obviously aren't sitting well with constituents. Senator Bean and Mia Jones, your thoughts on that piece of this?
Karen, again, Representative Jones, you want to go first? I'll take it either way.
Okay.
I think that the fact that we can pay what we pay for insurance, that we should be able to provide the same for all Floridians and to make sure that we have a stable and viable health care system that we can all be proud of.
Senator Bean.
I think it's the issue. And Rose, thank you for bringing it up. I think the issue is a red herring. I think it's part of the overall compensation of serving in the legislature or serving on the cabinet. I want to look at proposals that do great things, regardless of what compensation is. I think it's a good thing to take advantage of federal monies and doing it in a program that's in conservative nature program. So I'm hopeful that in the future that we can consider something that can address healthcare needs and do it in a conservative fashion.
Well, since you both have been instrumental in this process, we are very grateful to have both of your participation on the program, two leading lights in our North Florida delegation. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Melissa Ross, always a pleasure. Representative Jones, always good to be with you, and hope we'll see you guys real soon.
Looking forward to it, Senator.
Excellent. We were joined by Senator Aaron Bean of Fernandina Beach, Jacksonville's Representative Mia Jones, both on the program this morning. Much more still ahead later. Don't miss our talk with Special Olympic star Loretta Claiborne as she speaks on the First Coast. But up next, how advocates are making real progress in this area in ending homelessness, especially veteran homelessness. We'll tell you about it right after this.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
WJCT's new weekend programs are here. Tune in to 89.9 Saturday and Sunday for brand new shows and old favorites at a new time. Join us for True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour, live comedy and music on Wits, and Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Learn more and see the new schedule at wjct.org/weekends.
Fact or fiction? Do seeds or popcorn exacerbate diverticulitis? What is the best diet? Do vaccines cause autism? And does duct tape really cure warts? The Medical Mythbusters session will answer these questions and more. Join us at our annual health conference, Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 15th, Hyatt Hotel. Tickets are only $40. More information at wjct.org/Baptist, good for you, or call 904-549-2938.
On the next reveal, a doctor who has to act like a detective just to treat his patients.
They were careful encounters. Always sworn to secrecy.
Tracking down the trade secrets behind sick workers at the most innovative high-tech companies in the world. That's on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition, up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen tomorrow.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
I don't think I'm going to be at all famous.
I don't think I could handle it.
Amy Winehouse did become famous for records like Rehab, and she did have trouble handling fame. She died at the age of 27. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the director of the new documentary, Amy, and with her first manager. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, it's an ambitious goal for the First Coast to end veteran homelessness in our area by the end of 2015. And advocates say they are on track to meeting that benchmark. Don Gilman is CEO of the Emergency Services and Homeless Coalition of Northeast Florida, and she joins us now along with the organization's consultant, Ioana Allen, to bring us up to date. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Don, tell us about this project. Back in March, you housed dozens of homeless veterans and 22 chronically homeless individuals. What's been happening since March?
Well, a lot of things have been happening. We continue to hit our targets on a monthly basis for housing both homeless veterans and chronically homeless persons in our three-county area. This is part of a national effort called Zero 2016. So as you mentioned, we are looking to get to functional zero for veterans by the end of this year and functional zero by the end of next year, 2016.
Ioana, how are you going to meet that goal? That's a pretty high bar.
It is. I think one of the key things is very much, you know, like being here with you today and just helping to build awareness about the effort and what needs to be done and how people can get engaged. I interface with people all the time who want to help but don't necessarily know what they can do. So I think the awareness is a huge piece for us. And I would also, since I have the opportunity, encourage businesses locally to also really get on board in terms of support and community organizations. It's a really great effort to do something that is hugely needed in our community.
How can people and organizations be part of this?
There's a couple different ways. If they just want to learn a little bit more, maybe meet us and get involved. Initially, we are having an event on July 23rd at the Candy Apple Sweet Pete's. So that is a way to see what our numbers have been for the past 6 months. We will be publicly announcing how far we are towards our goals and targets. We also have some volunteer opportunities directly with our agency. Usually that's with our point-in-time count in January, so that's something they can get involved with. And we are also the lead entity of a coalition of 50 different organizations throughout the three-county area. If people would like more of a direct helping experience, we are happy to connect them with other agencies.
And when people get involved, they're really having a direct hand in getting people into housing. How does that process work?
It works in the perfect world. We have outreach workers who are out every day through the coalition. Most of them, people are probably most familiar with Sulzbacher's Hope Team. They connect with a person. Once we build that trust with the person, we find out what sort of housing they need, get them connected there, and get them moved in. One of the things that we have found is for people who have been homeless for any length of time, usually do not have all the things you need to make a house a home. So going back to your previous question, one of the other ways that people can help is to help us house an apartment. If a veteran or a family is moving in, helping them have the necessary items so they can function in that apartment.
So you've housed 34 homeless veterans since March. How many more estimated homeless veterans do you have in your sights in this area?
We actually have a by name list of all the homeless veterans that we know of in Duval Clay and Nassau County. When we started with that list, it was over 200. It is now about at the 120 to 130 range. Our goal is to continue to house 34 veterans or veteran families a month. If we do that, that gets us the total number down to where if anyone would fall into homelessness or have a housing crisis, we'd be able to identify them and assist them within a 30-day period.
And what's it like when you get someone into housing, help them find a job? Just tell us what that's like, Ioana, for you and for the folks you're helping.
It's so rewarding. You know, I really believe that we genuinely are placed on this earth to help others. Like, that is our purpose. And I think the work that Changing Homelessness is doing really supports that. Helping others is the rent we pay for occupying our space on earth. It's very true that that is the sole purpose that we're here. So it's extremely gratifying on a personal level and also professionally to even work with the organization and as their consultant to be able to do that work.
So again, real progress in this issue of ending veteran homelessness, and that event is coming up, let's say it one more time.
July 23rd. At Candy Apple. They can go to our newly relaunched website, which is changinghomelessness.org.
Go to changinghomelessness.org. Be part of this amazing effort on the First Coast. Ioana Allen and Don Gilman with the Emergency Services and Homeless Coalition of Northeast Florida. Ladies, thanks for the good work and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Ms. Ross.
Thank you.
And we're back in a moment with Special Olympic star Loretta Claiborne. That's next.
Who is your American Graduate Champion? WJCT is looking to recognize and honor a wide range of community leaders and everyday heroes who regularly dedicate their time, talent, and resources to prepare students for success and graduation. American Graduate Champions are role models in their communities whose stories have the potential to inspire others to take action. The nomination deadline is July 15th at 5 p.m. Click the button on WJCT.org to nominate your American Graduate Champion today.
Hey, it's John Moe, the host of Wits, a new show recorded live at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. Some of the top names in comedy and music join us each week for sketches.
You are so far outside the box right now, you are back in the box.
Music.
I'm out of the game.
And life's big questions. How's it going?
It's going great, man. This is a wonderful program.
Saturday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Well, finally, this hour, she was the middle child from a poor single-parent family, born partially blind and intellectually challenged. Loretta Claiborne was unable to walk or talk until she was 4. But eventually, Loretta began to run, and before she knew it, she'd crossed the finish line of dozens of marathons, twice placing among the top 100 women in the Boston Marathon. She introduced President Clinton at the 1995 Special Olympics Summer Games. She's won dozens of medals and holds the current women's record in her age group. Today, Loretta Claiborne is a celebrated athlete, honored with ESPN's Arthur Ashe Award for Courage. Her life story was told in the Walt Disney production, The Loretta Claiborne Story. Loretta Claiborne will be the next Fierce Talk speaker tonight at Women's Wednesdays at the Treasury on the Plaza in St. Augustine. She joins us right now with a preview. Loretta, good morning.
Good morning.
What an inspiration to even hear your story. There's so much excitement as you prepare to talk tonight at the Fierce Talks. You're a really accomplished motivational speaker. What's the key message you have for audiences, especially when you go and speak to an audience of women?
Well, when I go to speak to an audience of women, I always let them know that we have power as a woman. And so many times, even today in 2015, it's still a man's world, there are some people out there that think women are second. And I always say, no, no, no. I take the first chair as well as you or better.
Very nice.
Being a woman.
Now, how did you connect with running to find your source of power?
My brother Hank ran, and he's now deceased. He was a Marine. And before that, I had problems with not being accepted in the community as a child. Anyone who has children or anyone who was a child knows what it's like when you're not being accepted. You're not playing in the game. Oh, you sit on the side, you watch. And this is only for historical purposes only. I was the retard. So, oh no, no retards play in our game. She's too slow. But really, I was really fast. And the only time I was included is when I had my two hands up fighting somebody or outrunning somebody. So my brother Hank, he ran, and I started following him. And who would ever think that this fall to be 50 years I've been running.
50 years.
50 years.
And you run a day.
And I run almost every day. Now, I'm visiting here in Florida. I'm not getting my runs in, but that's okay. I know that I'm here for a purpose and a reason.
So you just had this tremendous athletic ability. And how do you credit the Special Olympics with helping to really fully realize your dream of being a renowned athlete?
You said how I credit the Special Olympics. Well, I give all the credit to Special Olympics because when I was in high school, it was before Title IX. For those of you who don't know, women could not participate in sports in the early 70s. And I wanted to be a part of the track team. And of course, if you saw the movie, The Loretta Claiborne Story, didn't want me to be a part of the track team. But I was the one who went out and did the initiative of talking to the principal, which is a scary thing to a child.
How old were you?
I was just a high school kid.
Uh-huh.
And I went to talk to that principal. And after he said, yes, you girls can practice in the hall. Let's talk about these ladies again. The men had the track. We had the hall.
You had to run in the hall of the school?
In the hall of the school.
Get out of here.
The women were limited.
Gosh.
So finally, we get to the track. Our teacher says, we're going to take you to a track meet and show you what a track meet is like. When we got to this track meet, there were some empty slots. A coach came to her and says, why don't you let your girls run? She says, oh, it's just a track club. And she says, well, are you going to let my girls run? I'll ask them. So they got their girls together. They ran the relay, and I was standing there. And what made me mad was I was the fastest. They said, oh, no, you can't be on this relay. You're the retard. I was so upset. So at this time, it was a crucial time. I was living with anger. That's the only way I had to deal with things. Then I got into Special Olympics. And it was the best thing that was ever happened to me. I can remember a coach saying to me, this is for you. And if you want to be a part of it, you have to have respect for yourself and you have to have respect for others. And all I want you to do is to be your best. And I was hooked.
And you went on to this unbelievable, blazing series of accomplishments, not only on the track, but let's just talk about this. You have a fourth degree black belt in karate. You speak four languages, including American Sign Language, two honorary doctorate degrees. You're the first person with an intellectual disability to receive these honors, and you will be speaking tonight at the Fierce Talk series at the Treasury in St. Augustine. It's part of the She is Fierce Women's Wednesdays series. We want to get everyone to come out and see you speak because this is a really special opportunity.
It's a very special opportunity to be able to speak at a forum for women. It's very rare that I get this opportunity, and I've had spoken all over the country. I had just spoken at the White House and sat and had dinner with President Obama on July the 31st this past year. So to be able to speak at a women's forum is pretty awesome for me, too.
Well, it's awesome to have you on this show. Thanks for giving us a few minutes this morning. It's a pleasure.
And you're welcome.
She is Loretta Claiborne, the Arthur Ashe ESPN Courage Award winner, just one of her many honors. Don't miss the opportunity to come out and see Loretta Claiborne speak tonight at the Women's Wednesdays at the Treasury on the Plaza in St. Augustine. The Fierce Talk speaker for tonight. Go to She is Fierce Hate HQ. SheIsFierceHQ.com for tickets and information. Again, that's tonight, so enjoy that. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Our podcasts are now up on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, this fall, 5 million public school students in Texas will use textbooks that critics say misrepresent the Civil War and the nation's history of racial segregation. The battle over how the Civil War is taught in our public schools, that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.